The Congo rainforest has remained an enigma for centuries, a vast primordial wilderness covering 1.5 million square miles that has remained largely unchanged for 60 million years. When Michael Crichton published Congo in 1980, it captivated readers with its perfect blend of scientific intrigue, primate behavior research, and heart-pounding adventure. The novel became an instant bestseller and later inspired the 1995 film adaptation starring Laura Linney and Tim Curry. What makes this techno-thriller particularly fascinating is Crichton's meticulous research into gorilla communication and behavior, a subject that continues to fascinate primatologists and the public alike. Beyond its entertainment value, Congo explores the timeless theme of humanity's hubris when confronting nature's mysteries and the ethical questions surrounding our exploitation of both natural resources and animal intelligence. As we journey into this dark heart of Africa, prepare to encounter a lost civilization, diamond-hunting corporations, and perhaps most chillingly, a new species of intelligent ape that challenges our understanding of what separates humans from our closest evolutionary relatives. In the cold, windowless data room of Earth Resources Technology Services, ERTS, in Houston, mathematical prodigy Karen Ross monitors satellite images of Africa while awaiting transmission from her Congo field team. At just 24, Ross is brilliant but emotionally distant, earning her the nickname Ross Blasher from colleagues who find her precise, analytical nature both impressive and intimidating. The room hums with the sound of advanced computing equipment, walls lined with screens displaying real-time data from satellites positioned over Central Africa. When the transmission finally comes through, it reveals a horrifying scene that unfolds in stark digital clarity. The entire camp destroyed, high-tech equipment worth millions scattered like discarded toys across the jungle floor, and dead bodies visible in unnatural poses. The violence appears methodical, almost practiced. Before the feed cuts out, a mysterious figure appears briefly on screen, a shadow that would later prove crucial to understanding the massacre. The devastated camp represents what Earth's leader R.B. Travis calls the worst interference signature ever, an entire expedition wiped out in just 6 minutes, leaving behind $7.3 million in destroyed equipment. Travis, a former Pentagon official known for his strategic thinking, immediately implements crisis protocols. He instructs his team to hold life insurance policies for 30 days and suppress news of the disaster while they investigate, knowing that any publicity could alert their competitors. Using sophisticated data recovery techniques developed for military intelligence, Ross enhances the video frame by frame and discovers something shocking. The face of a male gorilla in the final frames, but with features unlike any documented species. Despite her youth and limited people skills, Ross convinces Travis to let her lead a return expedition. Her psychological profile, compiled by Earth's behavioral science team, describes her as highly intelligent, logical, flexible, resourceful, but also youthful ruthless, tenuous human rapport, domineering. The profile notes her exceptional ability to process complex data patterns, but flags concerns about her capacity to manage interpersonal dynamics in crisis situations. The stakes couldn't be higher. ERTS is competing with a Euro-Japanese consortium to find rare Type 2B blue diamonds, whose unique electrical properties and molecular structure could revolutionize computer technology and weapon systems. Ross immediately contacts Dr. Peter Elliott, a prominent gorilla researcher at Berkeley, who surprisingly volunteers to join the expedition with his language-trained gorilla Amy. What Ross carefully omits from their discussions is the true military potential of their objective. The diamonds they seek would enable high-energy lasers and optical computers operating 1,000 times faster than electronic circuits, creating war too rapid for human comprehension, literally war at the speed of light. These blue diamonds, found only in volcanic formations in the Congo Basin, contain boron impurities that make them natural semiconductors. In this high-stakes technological race, whoever reaches the Congo first stands to gain billions in defense contracts and technological supremacy, potentially shifting the balance of global military power. Peter Elliott's research career began in 1973 when he met Amy, a sick baby gorilla who promptly bit him. By 1975, he had secured a $160,000 annual budget to make Amy the foremost primate language research subject. His breakthrough came in February 1979 when Amy began reporting dreams, the first primate to do so, using sign language to describe sleep box, sleep pictures, that made her cry. Though initially exciting, Amy's behavior deteriorated afterward, with her word acquisition rate dropping dramatically. Elliott's troubles multiplied when his unpublished paper, Dream Behavior in a Mountain Gorilla, leaked to activists, sparking protests at Berkeley demanding Amy's release. Prominent primatologists publicly condemned his work as fanciful, unethical, and even fascist. The situation seemed hopeless until research assistant Sarah Johnson discovered a 1642 Portuguese engraving showing ruins in the Congo jungle with semicircular arches matching Amy's drawings exactly. This suggested the controversial possibility of genetic memory, that Amy might be recalling ancestral experiences. Elliott's legal consultant explained that animal research was becoming increasingly problematic as language studies with apes and dolphins proved these animals were self-aware. Recent legal cases reflected this shift, including a dolphin named Mary, whose technician was acquitted after releasing her, and a chimpanzee named Arthur, who received custody with his trainer after demonstrating he didn't consider himself a chimpanzee. The message was clear. Take Amy out of the country quickly if that was the plan. Adding to the intrigue, someone named Morikawa from Japan had offered $250,000 to buy Amy. The team dismissed the idea of industrialized apes as impractical. Amy was intelligent but unreliable, demanding supervision, and had health concerns. They concluded Amy's drawings must be the real source of interest, though they couldn't understand why they'd be worth so much money. When Ross arrives claiming to represent the Wildlife Fund, she produces satellite photographs showing unmistakable images of ruins in the jungle with the distinctive crescent-shaped doors and windows from Amy's drawings, proof that the lost city of Zinj truly exists. With this revelation, Amy herself decides she wants to make the journey, picking up torn papers, her way of indicating she wants to go. The expedition's departure from San Francisco marks the beginning of an ambitious venture, launching from the tarmac in a specially modified Boeing 747 cargo jet. The aircraft's cavernous hold contains an impressive array of equipment, reinforced trucks designed for jungle terrain, inflatable river craft, and modular living quarters, all meticulously coded with computer-readable tags for swift assembly in the field. The loading process alone takes 6 hours, with technicians working through the night to secure the precious cargo. Amy's initial excitement at the massive aircraft quickly turns to terror once airborne. The gorilla, having never experienced flight, becomes increasingly agitated, frantically signing "wear ground" with such intensity that sedation becomes necessary. After the medication takes effect, her personality resurfaces. She demands her customary green drop drink, her term for a martini, and cigarette, displaying her peculiarly human vices. The combination of altitude and alcohol soon leaves her airsick, and she drifts into a fitful sleep, clutching her favorite blanket. During the transatlantic flight, Ross finally reveals the expedition's true purpose to the team. Ertz had uncovered the legend of Zinj, a mysterious lost city believed to house extraordinary diamond deposits. Historical records show dozens of failed expeditions over the centuries, with entire teams vanishing without trace. Ross's breakthrough came through innovative satellite analysis, using advanced algorithms to identify geometric patterns characteristic of human construction near known diamond deposits. Her field team had confirmed the ruins' existence 3 weeks earlier, but their success was short-lived. something had systematically attacked the camp, leaving behind grotesquely crushed skulls. The recovered video footage showed glimpses of what appeared to be gorillas, though notably different from known species, with distinctive gray coloring and unusual behavior patterns. In Tangier, they encounter Captain Charles Monroe, a complex figure whose reputation precedes him across Africa. Born to a Scottish farmer and his Indian housekeeper in colonial Kenya, Monroe's background reflects the complicated legacy of European colonialism. He began as a legitimate white hunter in Nairobi, guiding wealthy tourists on safaris, before transitioning into more questionable ventures: gun running, mercenary work, and various shadowy enterprises. Despite being banned from several African nations, his services remain in high demand among mining companies for his unparalleled ability to navigate both geographical and political dangers. Their negotiations with Monroe are dramatically interrupted by automatic weapon fire tearing through his residence, a warning from rival consortiums. The attack creates a convenient urgency, and Ross quickly closes a deal with Monroe at 5.7% of future profits. They make their escape down rarely used back stairs as local police converge on the scene, managing to board their flight to Nairobi just as authorities begin questioning witnesses. Meanwhile, ERT's cybersecurity team makes a disturbing discovery. Their secure communications have been compromised by a sophisticated piggyback slurp, a covert tap installed between legitimate terminals that has been monitoring all transmissions. This breach means the Euro-Japanese consortium now possesses identical coordinates for the lost city. ERT's computer models calculate their chances of reaching the site first at less than 20%. Yet, Travis authorizes the expedition to continue, implementing aggressive countermeasures against their better-equipped competitors. The expedition's carefully calculated plan unravels when they discover their communications are being electronically jammed by competitors. With their original plan to land at Mukenko Airfield compromised, they're forced to parachute into the jungle, despite Elliot having never jumped before. Monroe pushes the terrified professor from the plane, believing fear will keep him alert. After a terrifying descent through trees, Elliot lands safely, immediately vomiting from stress. Amy, who had bitten Monroe's ear during her own jump, greets Elliot with the signed message, "Amy, fly no like." 20 minutes later, the expedition is moving single file through the forest, beginning their 200-mile trek into the unexplored eastern Congo. They hear distant explosions of mortar and rockets striking villages of the Kigani indigenous people fighting for their hunting rights against government demands to farm. The Zaire government has dispatched 5,000 troops, American helicopters, and armored vehicles to crush the rebellion. Entering the Congo rainforest, Elliot experiences it as an enormous, hot, dark womb where new species developed in unchanging conditions before migrating to harsher environments. Amy's behavior immediately changes upon entering her original home. She begins foraging along the trail, eating lazily with a vacant expression, ignoring Elliot's requests to keep up. "She's become a gorilla again," Elliot explains. "Gorillas are vegetarians, and they spend nearly all day eating." At a pygmy village, the expedition discovers Bob Driscoll, a geologist from the first Congo expedition, in a catatonic state. Though physically unharmed, he's completely unresponsive except when Elliot approaches, causing Driscoll to emit a high-pitched wail. A pygmy explains that Elliot smelled like gorilla. The expedition endures a harrowing journey through the Rugora Gorge with boats careening off rock walls amid roaring waves. When a massive bull hippo attacks, Monroe fires tear gas while Kahega attempts to defend their rubber boat. The hippo slashes their vessel with its massive tusks, forcing them to beach the sinking craft. As they rest on the riverbank, they witness a Japanese C-130 transport plane dodging ground-to-air rockets fired by government forces, their competitors making their desperate journey north. After an arduous climb up Mount Mukenko and a perilous descent through its active crater, where sulfurous fumes and steam vents threaten their progress, the expedition finally reaches their destination. Ross's innovative tracking system proves invaluable, combining a high-altitude helium balloon with an ultra-sensitive cadmium photocell array capable of detecting the faintest laser signals bouncing off the jungle canopy. This technological marvel guides them precisely to their target through the dense African wilderness. The lost city of Zinj emerges from the jungle like a forgotten dream. Its architectural features are remarkable despite centuries of tropical weathering and encroaching vegetation. The stonework displays sophisticated masonry techniques rarely seen in African archaeology, with distinctive half-moon curved doorways and windows that perfectly match Amy's drawings. These unique architectural elements suggest a civilization far more advanced than previously documented in this region of Africa. The city's layout presents an archaeological puzzle. Unlike other ancient cities with clear ceremonial centers or distinct residential quarters, Zinj appears strangely uniform and utilitarian. Block after block of rectangular rooms of nearly identical dimensions stretch across the site, their walls bare of the elaborate decorations typical of ancient African kingdoms. This peculiar standardization forces the team to resort to playful modern labels, the post office, the jail, the commissary, though these designations are purely speculative. Using cutting-edge technology, including military-grade infrared imaging systems and video equipment linked via satellite to Houston supercomputers, they unlock the city's visual history. The enhanced images reveal a sophisticated society of tall, muscular inhabitants sharing physical characteristics with modern Bantu peoples. These ancient citizens wore elaborately patterned robes in rich colors, suggesting a prosperous culture. Market scenes come alive through the imaging technology, showing traders displaying rough diamonds, their signature commodity. The city's abandonment presents another mystery. There are no signs of violent conquest, no charred remains or scattered weapons that would indicate warfare. Instead, the evidence suggests a rapid but orderly departure. Monroe, drawing on his extensive military experience, notes a crucial anomaly. Despite the obvious wealth of diamonds, there are no depictions of guards, soldiers, or security measures anywhere in the city's artwork. In a vast courtyard, they encounter dozens of stone paddles strewn about like abandoned ceremonial objects. The discovery leads them to a temple-like structure housing a colossal statue, a fearsome gorilla brandishing stone paddles like symbols, its expression frozen in an eternal threat display. Ross explains the expedition's true objective, the unique blue diamonds of Zinj. Though worthless as jewelry, these stones possess exceptional optical properties crucial for developing next-generation computer systems and advanced weapons technology. Their search leads them to elaborate mining tunnels carved into the mountain slopes where raw diamonds still protrude from the walls in extraordinary concentrations. The expedition takes a dark turn when Elliot receives disturbing information about Amy's past. Computer transmissions from Mrs. Swenson reveal that the accepted story of Amy's mother being killed by hungry natives was false. The truth proves far more sinister. She was found with a crushed skull, and Sudanese soldiers had transported both her corpse and the infant Amy for 5 days, hoping to profit from selling them to tourists. Archived photographs document the gruesome scene, the mother's shattered skull and baby Amy nearby, her mouth frozen in a silent scream of terror. Ross makes the chilling connection that Amy's recurring nightmares likely stem from this early trauma of witnessing her mother's violent death. In a vast courtyard, they encounter dozens of stone paddles strewn about like abandoned ceremonial objects. The discovery leads them to a temple-like structure housing a colossal statue, a fearsome gorilla brandishing stone paddles like symbols, its expression frozen in an eternal threat display. Ross explains the expedition's true objective, the unique blue diamonds of Zinj. Though worthless as jewelry, these stones possess exceptional optical properties crucial for developing next-generation computer systems and advanced weapons technology. Their search leads them to elaborate mining tunnels carved into the mountain slopes, where raw diamonds still protrude from the walls in extraordinary concentrations. The expedition takes a dark turn when Elliot receives disturbing information about Amy's past. Computer transmissions from Mrs. Swinson reveal that the accepted story of Amy's mother being killed by hungry natives was false. The truth proves far more sinister. She was found with a crushed skull, and Sudanese soldiers had transported both her corpse and the infant Amy for 5 days, hoping to profit from selling them to tourists. Archived photographs document the gruesome scene, the mother's shattered skull and baby Amy nearby, her mouth frozen in a silent scream of terror. Ross makes the chilling connection that Amy's recurring nightmares likely stem from this early trauma of witnessing her mother's violent death. The expedition's first night in Zinj is interrupted when something triggers their electric fence, though no one can identify what caused it. The next day, Amy returns to camp after spending time with wild gorillas. Though initially angry at her disappearance, Elliot questions her about her experience. Amy explains that she had joined a troop where silverbacks and other gorillas had sniffed her, given her food, and accepted her into their group. However, she found them dumb because gorillas no talk sign language. When asked about the attacks on their camp, Amy insists they weren't normal gorillas but bad things that came at night. That evening, the team prepares for nighttime defense by digging a water-filled moat around their perimeter fence and setting up laser-tracking projectile systems. After midnight, they hear breathing sounds from the jungle. Gray gorillas attack with surprising intelligence, placing logs across the moat and charging from multiple directions simultaneously. When the electric fence fails, Monroe orders the silencers removed from their weapons. The deafening gunfire finally drives the gorillas away, but not before several are killed. Examining the dead gorillas, Elliot discovers a new species he names Gorilla Elliotensis. These aren't ordinary gorillas, but specially bred guard animals, intelligent, nocturnal, and aggressive rather than diurnal and shy. Exploring what they initially thought was a temple, the team discovers it was actually a training school. Bas reliefs reveal the shocking truth. The inhabitants of Zinj had trained gorillas as guards for the mines. The sequential images show caged gorillas, then Africans leading gorillas on ropes, instructing them in courtyards, and finally the gorillas attacking straw dummies. Elliot explains that the gorillas could have maintained this training through generations by teaching each other, just as language-skilled primates teach their offspring. The next morning, they discover two porters dead near their tent. Despite the previous night's successful defense, a gorilla had used a stick to lift the electrified fence, crawled through, and carefully restored the fence to its original condition before leaving. This calculated intelligence contradicts their expectations of animal behavior. Amy leads them into the jungle, where they discover approximately 300 gray gorillas on the hillside, far exceeding the largest known gorilla group ever documented. Realizing they're drastically outnumbered, with approximately 60 male gorillas against their group of 9, the expedition attempts to leave. But as they march through the narrowing jungle path, they hear the distinctive sighing sounds of gorillas coming from all directions. Monroe makes the difficult decision to turn back, realizing the gorillas will not let them leave. Elliot has a flash of insight while watching Amy sign to Kahega. He realizes the linguistic skill of the gray gorillas could be their weakness. He proposes capturing a single gray gorilla to learn its language and establish communication. Using the AP, Animal Pattern Explanation, developed at Berkeley, they could forge satellite links to analyze and translate the gorilla's language quickly. Though Amy initially claims she can't speak the gorilla language, Elliot discovers through careful questioning that she can understand it. He and Amy spent hours recording gorilla sounds while Amy provides translations. Working frantically, they verify matches for basic words like food, water, yes, no, come, and go. By 9 p.m., they have 11 reliable vocabulary words and compose 3 messages: go away, no come, and bad here. That night, torrential rain pours down, shorting the electrical fence, destroying visibility, and rendering their defenses nearly useless. The gorillas attack in disciplined waves, breaching the perimeter and overwhelming the camp. Just as Elliot faces certain death, the rain lightens, allowing their broadcast sounds to be heard. The gorillas freeze, listening to the messages, then gradually retreat into the jungle, confused and perplexed. The next morning, the expedition awakes to find black ash covering their campsite and Mount Mukenko belching smoke in the distance. Despite Amy's insistent signing to leave now and warnings that Earth bad, Ross places resonant conventional explosives in the mine tunnels to assess diamond deposits. Amy, fascinated by the detonator's LEDs, pushes the button, triggering a series of explosions that awaken Mount Mukenko with devastating force. The team experiences a catastrophic earthquake and volcanic eruption. Lightning strikes everywhere with blinding flashes, creating a continuous sizzling sound. One porter is killed when lightning grounds through him, bursting his body into flames. The team struggles through falling trees and continuous tremors. From higher ground, they watch as lava engulfs the hillside and eventually buries the lost city of Zinj forever, along with Ross's diamonds. The team's final exodus unfolds through an apocalyptic landscape transformed by Mukenko's wrath. They stumble through knee-deep volcanic ash, their throats raw from sulfurous fumes, while around them the jungle writhes in its death throes. The once crystal waterfalls now cascade with obsidian sludge, and the equatorial sky has transformed into a roiling ceiling of gray, periodically illuminated by crimson lightning from Mukenko's continuous eruptions. Nature's upheaval manifests in increasingly disturbing ways. Flocks of disoriented birds plummet from toxic clouds. A leopard races past them with its fur ablaze, and the distant bellows of terrified elephants echo through the wasteland. For 6 grueling hours, they navigate this hellscape, ducking between charred trees to avoid patrolling military units still searching for foreign interlopers. Their salvation appears in the form of the consortium's abandoned C-130 transport plane, its metal skeleton gleaming dully in the ash-filtered light. Inside, they discover their last hope, the expedition's hot air balloon, miraculously undamaged. The massive envelope, when filled with 50,000 pounds of superheated propane air, becomes their ark of escape. As they lift off from the dying jungle floor, the balloon's ascent marks humanity's retreat from nature's domain. Below them, the Kigani warriors emerge like shadows from the tree line, their arrows arcing harmlessly through the ash-laden air as the balloon climbs to 2,000 feet. Riding thermal currents eastward, they drift over Mukenko's incandescent crater, watching rivers of lava carve new scars into the ancient landscape, before crossing the moonlit escarpment of the Great Rift Valley. By January 1980, Mukenko's fury subsides, leaving an 800-meter-deep obsidian grave marking the lost city of Zinj's final resting place. The expedition survivors scatter like seeds in the wind, each forever changed by their encounter with the primordial heart of Africa. Karen Ross abandons the corporate world of ERTS for the more contemplative realm of the U.S. Geological Survey. Peter Elliott takes extended leave from Berkeley, following a new calling to study Amy alongside wild gorillas in Zaire's remote forests. Kahega returns to his life in Nairobi, though his nights remain haunted by memories of gray gorillas. Captain Munro, ever the opportunist, successfully trades the blue diamonds before becoming entangled in various international intrigues across 3 continents. Amy's story takes perhaps the most profound turn. She vanishes into the wilderness with her young son, leaving behind only sporadic reports from local villagers. Her son's demonstrated ability to sign, Amy like Peter, becomes a tantalizing glimpse of evolutionary possibilities, suggesting that the bridge between human and ape consciousness might extend into future generations. The Congo, that great green heart of Africa, has once again swallowed its secrets, but the expedition's discoveries continue to challenge our understanding of animal intelligence, human hubris, and the razor-thin boundary between civilization and primal nature. In nature's final judgment, Mount Mukenko's molten fury entombed both ancient mysteries and modern ambitions beneath a basalt sarcophagus. The lost city and its deadly guardians now lie sealed beneath tons of cooling rock, a reminder that some secrets are perhaps best left undisturbed for another 60 million years of unbroken silence and darkness.